a fan.
Hey, what's up, man?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
This is your the best loss of the season leader fan radio network.
Tweet that.
And KFAN.com. 1 minute, 52 seconds past 3 o'clock Central Daylight Time. Welcome back. It's a new week. Bumper to Bumper is the name of the show. It's live, it's local, and it's a 3.5 hour program Monday through Friday, 3 to 6:30. Right here on a gorgeous Monday afternoon in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am the host of the program. My name is Dan Barrero. Gardzi is the producer of the broadcast. Thank you for participating in today's festivities. We have rebooted the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. All previous emails have been expunged and removed because they can be very much of a nuisance to us. And we start from scratch at 3. So if you'd like to email us, now is the opportunity. Now is the time to do it. But we'll keep it open all the way until 6:30 tonight. I mentioned off the top of the program that we are indeed the best loss of the season. And the Minnesota Twins had exactly that yesterday. I know that's supposed to be a contradiction in terms. Best and loss. A loss is a loss is a loss, especially one that shaves your lead in the standings to a single game over the Cleveland Guardians, and I believe 2 games over the Chicago White Sox. Hurts even more given we're headed to Los Angeles to take on the Dodgers, who have won 35 of their last 40 games. Meanwhile, guess who the Guardians and White Sox are playing? They're playing the 2 worst teams in the division, the Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. So you say to yourself, Dan, there's no such thing as a best loss or a good loss. I stand by my position that yesterday's gut-wrencher was the Twins' best loss of the season. And the guy, more than anybody else, who should be not disparaging, not hammering, the folks in, where were they? New York, Toronto, wherever they do it.
New York, I think.
Make the call or the on the appeal. He should be praising them. He should be thanking them. Because it's through the decision they made that for the first time since Rocco got here, he's won over his fan base. For the first time. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
There might not be a more vocal behind-the-scenes critic of Rocco Baldelli than Josh Broughton, one of us Hollywood actor guys.
That's right.
It's relentless, almost to the point where I felt it was bordering on obsession. Here's what he texts me. This was at 8.06 p.m. Central Daylight Time yesterday. I'm done being done with Rocco. Llama Oboe.
Yeah, he's back.
And he's a good test case. For the first time, we saw, for want of a better description, a livid llama. Livid. And let's be honest, there have been many, many times over the course of his, you know, successful run as manager overall, one has to say, where I think people are just shaking their heads and saying, God, is there heart in there? Is there blood pumping through his system? Is he all numbers and all abacuses?
And all zen?
And all zen and all, you know, whatever the general manager and the president of baseball operations says, is that it? Does anything shoot through his veins? Does he ever seem human? Now, you could say, well, no, the Baldali Lama, that's the whole point. Very Zen-like. It's always keep your composure, because when you're playing the long game, and we all know the baseball season is long, you're probably better off that way. If you short circuit, if you go livid every single day, you'll implode and you might not last. I think we all accept that. But there have been way too many times where you want to just almost like slap him and go, Rocco, show something. Show you're pissed off. A little bit of emotion. Something that indicates that there's stuff going behind you or inside you that isn't programmed new age. If all felt too programmed, he was not programmed yesterday. He was as angry as I've ever seen a Minnesota Twins manager. Now, I always used to laud Tom Kelly, often in print, for refusing to automatically play the role that managers historically are supposed to play. And that is, no matter how bad or good the call is, if it goes against your team, it's your obligation to pretend it was one of the worst calls ever, when replay or even before replay showed it's actually there was nothing wrong with the call. The old, I got to protect my players. Kelly despised that cliche, and I applauded him for it. Kelly went out there when he thought there was a reason to go out there. If he didn't think there was a reason to go out there, I'm not going to play that game. It's stupid. We look bad. You're out. Sorry. Steve Lombardozzi, second base. You're out. You weren't safe going into second base or third base or home plate. He could get worked up. Ron Gardenhire was more traditional. He would blow his stack.
Yes, he would.
He would get very red. Now, for my money, Gardy did it too often. But Gardy, that was sort of the role that he played. Rocco, again, as angry as I've seen Gardy and as angry as I've seen TK the few times he went out there, I think this meltdown beats them all to the point where has there been a suspension announced yet? He's got to be suspended. The way baseball works, the powers that be.
Some type of fine for sure.
But I will be stunned if he's not suspended. And as it's all playing out, we'll get to the call itself. I'm thinking maybe even within his own locker room, within his own clubhouse. Yeah, kind of like that. Has our backs on this one. That's Rocco. He's not just all about the numbers. There is a pulse there. Because there is such a thing as being too Zen-like. Being so cool that emotional players and emotional fans start wondering, well, show me something. Beyond the fact that it's that kind of play crystallizes. We could do another hour on this. It crystallizes why people love sports. Crystallizes it. The sort of controversial call on a game-winning play, as it turns out. Now, it was the top of the 10th, but it held up. Everything on the line, good opponent, chance to win a series against a good team, etc. That's what why sports captivates as many people as it does, I think. But I got to say, and I could regret it, if we end up losing the division by a game, that might be a different issue. I don't think it's going to be like that. But otherwise, I think in the grand scheme of things, Rocco Baldelli should be thanking the appellate court, the appellate baseball court, because it gave him a chance, and it didn't come off. None of it came off phony.
No.
He was livid. His quotes during his yelling at the umps, who, by the way, it really wasn't their fault. He's yelling at them because there's no one.
He's got to yell at somebody.
He's got nobody else to yell at. Yeah. Although, you'll notice at one point, he started yelling with Effenheimer's up towards the press box.
That was my favorite part of the whole deal.
And I think that was the closest he could come to saying, well, that's for the people in New York.
Yes.
Who've made this, who've reversed this, yes, particular call.
The double bleep off, bleep,
yes,
off.
It was
pointing
tremendous.
Like a conductor. It was the ultimate, the best walk-off of the season.
Very good.
With all due respect to walk-off dong, singles.
And guess what? As silly as it appears, that's what bonds fans to managers.
Yes.
It really does. That's why he should be thankful. Because you could argue that, well, it shouldn't have had to take this kind of play to get there, but this is more organic. It got him there. And he lost it. And he lost it several times in the post-game presser,
yeah,
as well. Effenheimer this.
Chicken bleep.
Chicken bleep that. I don't know. You know, basically suggested it was the worst call in the history of blown calls in any sport.
A travesty.
It was tremendous.
Pathetic.
And he now he's got that in his back pocket. And he, until then, until that moment, whether it had anything to do with him being a good manager or not, he didn't have access to that. Well, he accessed, as I said, livid llama yesterday. And in the end, I think it's going to serve him well with his team. And I guarantee you that the next time, I don't know how soon the Twins return home. I think it's we're playing the Dodgers and the Angels, right? We got two LA series, and I think we come right back,
don't we? I think you're right. Yeah, I'll double check for you right now.
I guarantee you, the first time he is introduced upon our return, he's going to get a standing ovation. He will get a standing. That's my guy. That's my manager. That's Rocco.
It depends on how he uses the bullpen in L.A. because we can revert pretty quickly.
Oh, that's true.
People
too.
Are still they get annoyed with him on that.
Very, very true. I got a lot to get to on the call itself, too. A bunch.
A week from today, we come back to take on Kansas City.
Kansas City. So yep. Then we get to start playing the. Do we have a bunch of games left with KC?
KC, we've got
Detroit.
Yeah.
We don't have many left, right? Isn't it like, aren't we down to one series with the Tigers?
Yeah, second to last series on the road in Detroit. We've got three series left against Kansas City.
There you go. Well, we might need each and every one of those games. That's for sure, based on the way this thing is going. There's a bunch of frauds out there regarding the call itself. People who are calling it a horrific call that should never have been made. And I'm not on their side. I'm not on anybody's side, I've decided, in this case, other than Rocco's, other than the Baldelli llama, finally seizing the opportunity, a golden opportunity, to say, yeah, I got a pulse. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm human. I'm not a robot. I'm not just a product of Falvey and Levine, where it's just all about pushing numbers. That one was in my gut. That's all to the better for our...
Mullers.com.
The Fan.
Johnny Athletic scheduled to join us via the Borton Volvo scorecard at 3:55 this afternoon, so about 35 minutes from now. And it's the return of the Big Knocker. Mayo Clinic Big Knocker Bill Maurice will join us at 5:15. So if you have questions for him, get him in the queue now. Brad Sean Bryan inbox, booth at KFAN.com. You could also hit the listen line. It's another way to ask Knocker a question. We're going to try to get to the bottom of what we need to know regarding specifically monkeypox, although I don't want to leave the COVID part of it out of the equation. So that'll be right after the top five at five. We've got a bunch. bunch more to get to regarding the controversial finish or near finish to the Twins' loss to Toronto yesterday, ending the series in a 2-2 split. Before we do that, though, there's some breaking news developing out of Bloomington, Minnesota. In fact, I think there's a briefing that was scheduled to start at 3. Gargi, if there's more information to add to it, let me know. But what we do apparently know via, this is via Fox9.com, is that three individuals, including Best Western Hotel employees, were charged today in connection to the shooting at the Mall of America on Thursday, August 4th. Now, according to this story, via the Fox9.com website, the shooter remains at large and has not been formally charged.
The second person as well that encouraged the shooting from the mall
also
remains at large.
At large.
Yes.
The individuals already charged are accused of helping the shooter and that other man you mentioned evade arrest. The three people charged are Dinesh Raghubir. I may be mispronouncing that last name. Forgive me if I am. 21, Minneapolis, charged with aiding an offender to avoid arrest. Delaney Quenshawn Arnold, 23, of Burnsville, is charged with aiding an offender to avoid arrest. And Selena, R-A-G-H-U-B-I-R, same last name as the first defendant of Bloomington, is charged with aiding an offender to avoid arrest as well. You'll recall, in this case, we were on the air when this story broke. Police working at the Mall of America responded to multiple gunshots at the Nike store, where they found three shell casings on the floor inside the entrance. Officers ultimately checked surveillance video. That showed a fight breaking out involving six individuals near the checkout of the store, causing customers to run away. Then two people involved in the altercation left the store briefly before the suspect returned and fired a handgun several times at the males involved in the fight. The shooter and another man then ran out the north doors of the mall into the IKEA parking lot, according to the charges now filed earlier today. It was later learned that the two men may have been picked up by a Best Western Hotel shuttle.
Yep.
At IKEA and were taken to the hotel just south of Mall of America. The person with the shooter called Arnold a few minutes after the shooting, and he received five calls from Arnold between 4:20 and 4:23 p.m., the complaint said. Arnold then contacted his girlfriend, that's Selena, who is assistant manager at the Best Western, as well as Selena's cousin, who picked up the shooter and the other man at IKEA in the Best Western shuttle. Dinesh Raghubir told police he knew the two men were friends of Selena, and when he dropped them off at Best Western, Selena immediately left the front desk. He didn't see her for about 45 minutes, the charges said. He said Selena later called him and asked what time police left. On August 5, officers searched Arnold and Selena's home and vehicle, where they found the shirts the men were wearing at the time of the shooting. That's, again, according to the charges. The complaint says the assistance provided by these three individuals and the misinformation provided to police in the flight of the two men and the interference into the investigation of the the shooting at Mall of America is why they are being charged. The three people are in custody, scheduled to make their first court appearance at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow. The two people they're accused of helping after the shooting remain at large. Some media outlets have tentatively identified, at least I believe, the shooter, but I don't know that anybody has got that confirmed yet, and I don't know if any of those names have been revealed via the presser that started at 3 or was scheduled to start at 3, may or may not still be going on. I don't know. Anything else you can add to that?
No, that story is pretty thorough, and I have not seen anything regarding the names of the shooters. It doesn't look like it that they've been identified. The last tweet I've seen from the press conference was 5 or 6 minutes ago, so I don't know if it's still going on or not. But we don't know, at least on the record yet, the identity of the shooter.
Okay. So we'll keep you posted there, because there's I think, a lot more meat to that story that we can get back to, but I wanted to pass along that information.
Level one felonies, by the way, what they're being accused of.
Level one, okay.
Yeah, you know, 3 years possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just reading through the charges and what the
significant charges.
Yes,
for sure.
As they should
and
be.
They absolutely should be. That they have a right to obviously defend themselves, and this is the police version of events, but it's absolutely serious and it's absolutely merited and warranted. I've said this before, I say it again, man. If we are as serious as we say we want to be about guns and about gun violence, then we can't have any tolerance for individuals involved in the shooting like this and also who were aiding and abetting them getting away. And in this case, according to the accusations, passing along false information to try to throw authorities off the track as well. On the wild finish of the Twins game, back to that, here's there are two groups of frauds that I think we need to expose before we go any further on this subject. And they know who they are. I'll leave the replay terrorists for later. The people who have insisted that we got to get it right and we got all this technology and we got to use it. And it's not right if that call stands and that's just the way it has to be. And again, this is the monster you unleash in your fervor over getting it right in a sports competition. But let's leave those folks aside for a second. There's another set of terrorists that we need to speak to directly. And they know who they are. I guarantee you that a number of the individuals who are livid, like the llama, about the reversal, saying it was a poor interpretation, that there's no way that that should have been reversed. That's no way to lose a game. In fact, it's interesting. I found the most persuasive comment in favor of the Twins' position, and obviously Twins fans' position, was offered up by a Blue Jays player. Did you read it? Jay starter Kevin Gausman. He pitched 6 shutout innings yesterday. We're not scoring a lot of runs right now. And now we got more injury problems. But let me read you the quote. I didn't think it would be overturned, to be honest. That's just one of those weird rules. It was a perfect throw. And it's like, does the guy have to move based on the throw? It was essentially a strike. If I'm Gary Sanchez, what else am I supposed to do? But huge for us. I love the honesty. Yeah. Because, again, he's supposed to not give any...
he's supposed to say, yeah, they got it right. I thought he was in the line. Yeah,
no support to the no matter whether what he believes in his heart, he's not supposed to give any encouragement to the other side on this. And in effect, I thought he kind of described it very, very well. But if you'll recall, the particular rule in question, it's called the Buster Posey rule, right? Because
yes,
if you go back, this is, I think, over 10 years ago now, 2011, in fact, he ends up with a season-ending injury with a horrible collision at home plate, right? And what did the home plate terrorists do at that point? Have to change the rule. No play is worth a career-ending, well, it wasn't a career-ending, but a season-ending, potentially career-threatening sort of collision like that. We've got to protect people. We've got to protect the catcher. The rule has to be changed. 3 years later, it was. Now, depending on who you talk to, some people didn't think the change was that dramatic, but others said they thought it did. But what it did do was open the door to this sort of reversal. Absolutely opened that door. And so, I guarantee you, some of the same people are outraged. This can't stand. This reversal's awful. Generally speaking, love replay. Say it. We had to make it bigger and better and expand it more than ever to get it right. And many of them also were, this is inhumane to leave the catcher like that. You have to change. Where are the rule changes, Major League Commissioner? That can't be allowed to happen. This is uncivilized. Well, you reap what you sow. You open the door when you change the rule to the possibility that somebody in New York, maybe because they're having a bad day, maybe because they're having a particularly good day, maybe it's a day they want to troll. Minnesota Twins fans, I have no idea. They go, wait a minute. I'm reading it. This fits. This will not be allowed to stand. So my point is, every time I think we tend to overreact to any one incident, and in doing so, we end up with the path of unintended consequences. we go down that particular road. Replay in general, my opinion has been stated over and over and over again, and I don't deny that replay sometimes gets the correct call, corrects a bad call. I've never denied that. What I've said is, in turning the games over to replay, what you lose is not worth getting any individual call right. I stand by it, especially on this kind of play. Because to me, I would argue this shouldn't even be reviewable. Because I read somebody saying, well, they can break it down Zapruder film-like fashion, you know, mini-second by nanosecond.
Right.
And I'm going, well, but that's not, the guy at the home plate doesn't have that luxury.
Correct.
It's a judgment call. The argument doesn't seem to be about whether he was tagged out, right?
Right. It's about where he was.
It's about where he was.
Yeah, and when he was there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm saying, well, no, this shouldn't qualify for replay. But I guarantee you, some of the same people who are pretending to be outraged about, well, this could end up costing the Twins a season. This is unbelievable. How does this happen? Are the same people, look them up, who are four score. We got to, well, that can't happen again in baseball. That's barbaric. As opposed to saying, how often does it happen? It's awful whenever it happens, but it's sports. You can't take all the risk out of it. And if you go down this road, then you're opening up to all sorts of interpretation when you're blocking, when you're not blocking, when you have the ball, when's too far,
right,
where's not far enough, where's his position compared to the decision, to a certain extent, maybe that even the base runner, independent of what the catcher does, decides to take. Like on the outside of home plate, right, the inside of home plate, whatever the case may be, you reap what you sow when you go down these two roads. Replay's got to be on every, the same, you know who the people are. They want more replay in football. Everything, pass interference needs to be replay. Glenn Mason thinks that. Everybody thinks there's got to be more replay. And I'm sitting here saying, you can do it, but then don't whine to me when it gets out of control and you have this sort of situation where I think most logical people would say, whatever the call that was made in home plate, if it ain't about whether he got his toe on the plate before the catcher tagged him out, We're out. We're going to go. We're in real time on that judgment. We're going with the home plate umpire.
Close enough to let it go. And what was funny about the statement from New York, it was basically like where he caught it, he really didn't need to be there. He could have been somewhere else, which again, that's preposterous.
Yes.
Like to have to be able to break it down like that, it's just, it's not one thing where you catch it and then you're just completely blocking it or whatever. It's like, well, he was there and we don't think he really needed to be there. We think he could have done something completely different, which is a whole nother can of interpretation, and you shouldn't even have to split those hairs.
You shouldn't, but again, go back to when the Posey rule was instituted, and it was, I think, 3 years, I think it was 2014, there were people predicting, they said, man, you don't realize the can of worms you're opening up here. Nobody is happy that a player lost, was sidelined for the rest of the season. Nobody. But again, you're going, well, it's the game to a certain extent. And where are you going to draw the line? And what you decide to open up another door, wait for it. It's going to catch up with you sooner or later. Now, for all we know, this has happened a little bit more often than we've paid attention to. My guess is there have been some others. Rocco claimed it had never been called like this.
In the history of baseball.
In the history of baseball. Then he went, and then he kind of thought about it and said, well, virtually. Which I think was his way of trying to cover himself if somebody doing research on baseball, and there's a million people who do, say, well, wait a minute, Rocco. Actually, this has happened 7 times in the last 5. You know, because they have all the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, then you have to accept if indeed protecting a catcher is more important than anything else, because you had this one worst case scenario. Then, I don't think you can whine about it. You can say, well, that was for the greater. It was at the time viewed as a greater good for the game. Well, if it's a greater good for the game, they have a right to make the call. So then you're back to, now there's probably going to be a movement to change the call back or to adjust it again, because people, and this has always been scary to me because it's sports related, lose their minds even more than I do. But that can't happen. That has to be fixed. We have to fix that. And so the roar gets louder and louder. The pitchforks get poised. and we end up overcompensating and overcorrecting. And we look at it and go, how do we get here? Well, you got here because you're obsessed with replay, even though it's not ever, you're never going to be 100% of the time get the right call anyway.
Not with that attitude.
But not with that attitude. And beyond that, leaving aside all the time, the way it changes rhythms of games and the amount of time in which the actual game is played, we get it pretty much the same way. Boothacafan.com is the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. I mentioned the guests. We'll have maybe two odes to dead guys today, if we have time, before this program is indeed done. And the emails are pouring in as we speak. Johnny Athletic, you know, I'm curious to get his view. He's a ball guy. See what he thinks at 3:55. We've got some Viking stuff to get to today. We'll be back at training camp as soon as Wednesday. Wednesday afternoon between 3 and 6:30. We hope.
Yeah. Get down, tell me, oh, what you gonna do? Do you wanna get down? Oh, what you gonna do?
The catcher is not permitted to block the runner's path to the plate unless he is in possession of the ball, though blocking the path of the runner in a legitimate attempt to receive a throw is not considered a violation. That, in a nutshell, is what leaves me dizzy.
It's confusing.
Huh?
Yeah.
That's a direct, it's like, well, then to me, the interpretation that should matter is the umpire who's at home plate. Period. But it's a reviewable play. I mean, obviously, the Blue Jays challenged it. Do we know the basis on which? Do they have to say specifically what they're challenging? Because it comes off as, well, we got nothing to lose at this point.
Right.
If the call's wrong, we'll take a shot at it. Maybe not even knowing what we're really appealing. I have to get specific with what you're appealing, or does it matter? In other words, if you appeal it on one basis that you think he was safe, and they come away with it saying, well, no, he was out, but there was interference, we still then are obligated to reverse the call.
I would assume, I don't know for sure, but I think in most replay situations, you've got to be fairly specific on what you're reviewing. But again, I don't know for sure.
We'll find that out later in the week from one of the ball guys, I'm hoping.
And now, it's time for Ode to a Dead Guy.
Statement released this morning by John Easterling. Dame Olivia Newton-John passed away peacefully at her ranch in Southern California this morning, surrounded by family and friends. We ask that everyone please respect the family's privacy during this very difficult time. John Easterling is Dame Olivia Newton-John's husband. He goes on to write, Olivia has been a symbol of triumphs and hope for over 30 years, sharing her journey with breast cancer. Her healing inspiration and pioneering experience with plant medicine continues with the Olivia Newton-John Foundation Fund dedicated to researching plant medicine and cancer. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that any donation be made in her memory to the ONJ Foundation. Age 73 years old, won 4 Grammys, star of a very successful movie musical that was kind of in my, I think I would have been in college, or may have been shortly thereafter that the movie came out, called the movie version of Grease, where she played opposite John Travolta, did she not?
Yes.
In that film?
Unbelievable movie.
Very good movie, entertaining movie, very successful musical career. And I want to say, although I don't have it in front of me right here in this particular story, I think her original, I guess it was May 2000. Let me back up a little bit. I think she revealed that she was dealing with breast cancer a long time ago. 5 years ago, she announced that she was diagnosed with breast cancer and it had metastasized to the sacrum. And at that point, she would be completing something called photon radiation therapy, I should say, in addition to natural wellness therapies. For some reason, though, I thought the original diagnosis went back further than 17. But maybe that was it, that she'd been dealing with this from a relatively young age, but I could be, it's possible I could be mistaking her for someone else. A terrific career.
1992.
Oh, there you go. Okay, then it was, yeah.
She canceled publicity for one of her new albums.
Okay.
After she was diagnosed with breast cancer.
So, again, in the back of my mind, I always looked at her as, well, here's somebody who, they got to it early, or relatively early. She fought it off successfully. But it was a reminder in 92. So, again, that's 30 years ago, right? 1992 is 30 years ago. So, do the math. I can even do that math. She's 42, 43 years old when she finds out. And, you know, she's not the only person that age, not the only woman to get that diagnosis. But it's the old deal of if it's somebody famous and they're that young, you go, wow, oh, man, you know, unbelievable. And she'd obviously dealt with it very successfully for decades. And then apparently it was several years ago, 5 years ago to be precise, a little more than 5 years ago when at that point it moved to other parts of her body, and she was dealing with from that that point forward. She had several hits, right, musically speaking. What would her biggest hit be?
In terms of songs?
Songs,
I don't know. I mean,
she had a ballad called I Honestly Love You. Remember that one?
Yeah.
That was very successful.
That's probably in there. I mean, for me and my generation, it's just being locked in with Grease.
Grease, yes.
And that's how I'll always think of her. That's how, not so much as the musician, which obviously she had a great career there. But for me, she's always Sandy. I mean, that's just straight up who Olivia Newton-John was. But I Honestly Love You is a big one.
The big one for sure. And she had several others, as I recall. We'll try to get the whole list together. And like I said, one of two odes to dead guys that we are going to be doing. I mentioned four-time Grammy Award winner, 5 number one hits, and another 10 top 10 hits on the Billboard Hot 100, 2 Billboard 200 number one albums. If You Love Me, Let Me Know, that was in 74. And Have You Never Been Mellow, that was another song I remember. That was in 1975.
Physical's another song.
Yeah, that was huge.
Probably be a big one.
If You Love Me, Let Me Know. Have you Never Been Mellow, which we mentioned. Hopelessly Devoted to You. That's also from Grease.
Mm-hmm.
That was certainly a big one. And then from the 1980 film Xanadu, Magic and Xanadu with Electric Light Orchestra was very big as well. You're the One I Want, That I Want, that was with Travolta, correct?
Yes, at the end of Grease.
And that ranks as one of the best-selling singles ever, they tell me. Summer Nights was another one, I think, also. Wasn't that also from?
That was from Grease.
Grease, yeah. Summer Nights.
That's the thing. When did that movie come out? 1978.
78 is
so
correct.
So if you are born in 1978 or older, the odds that you sang that song in some type of school play, school concert, or karaoke.
Correct.
I mean, what's the percentage of people that have done one of those songs at some point in their life, like performed it themselves? I mean, because Grease is just omnipresent. You just named off like 7 bangers.
Correct.
And certainly that play and that musical has lived on in a bunch of different ways. Broadway specifically. Brooke Shields was in it on Broadway, if I remember correctly, when it first launched. I mean, it's just, like I said, omnipresent through so many people's lives. I mean, everybody, I think, almost everybody has had some type of Grease connection at one point in their life, whether they wanted to or not.
Yes.
That's how big the
talented,
musical was.
Talented, beautiful woman, obviously. Born in the United Kingdom. And reminded that apparently her Jewish maternal grandfather was a Nobel Prize winning physicist named Max Born. And Born and his wife and children fled to Britain from Germany before World War II to escape the Nazi regime, which I don't think I ever knew. Not sure that I did. Ultimately, her career, she ended up in Australia, did she not? At some point, she was in Australia. I think when her career took off, she attended school in a Melbourne suburb. And it was in Australia that was where her career kind of blossomed and her musical career began to thrive, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like most recently she's been living in Los Angeles, California. So it's a big one. There's no question about that. A very, very large one, and one that, like I said, is sort of a perfect example of somebody who has been dealing with cancer issues, one form or another, for more than half her life, or about half her life, right? Basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Little less, I guess, than that, because she was, as we said, she was in her early 40s. She passes away at 73 years old. So rest in peace, Olivia Newton-John. We'll come back with Johnny Athletic. He might have a favorite Olivia Newton-John song. I know he's got a lot to say about the Twins controversy yesterday, about the Minnesota Vikings. There's so much ground to cover with him. And don't forget the big knocker, William Maurice. Mayo Clinic, big shot, will join us right after tonight's or today's edition of the